Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. It is Thursday, the 5th of April, and we thank you for being with us. We have a terrific panel, most of whom are here. And and soon we'll, maybe even by the end of this introduction, everyone will be seated. But here we go. Let me introduce the panel and we'll get started. We'll talk about what's going on in the world. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hi, Joe. You can call me Upbeat Al.
Hello, Upbeat Al. I salute you. Good morning.
And I salute you back.
Very nice to see you. We're always thrilled when our good friend Ira Fussfeld is here. He is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, located in Kingston, New York. And how are you, sir?
I'm great. Nice to see you all.
Very nice to have you with us. Vera Akarios-Kelly was absent for 2 weeks. She was.
Yeah, where
she
were
was.
You?
Am I allowed to say where you were?
No, of course.
You were in your homeland of Germany.
I was. It was lovely. I just had a really nice time visiting friends and family. The weather was good. The sun was shining. The Easter flower markets were in full bloom. It was just gorgeous to be away.
You know, and the great thing is, at least 5 or 6 times in your absence, we would say, well, now if Vera were here, we would ask her this. So now you're here, so we'll have a lot of things.
Well, you
have
a lot
to
of catching up.
That's right. But we're very.
We forgot what we were going to ask.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'll remember at some point.
It's nice to have you here. Thank you
well,
very
thanks.
Much for being with us. Teresa Bourgeois has been here. We were talking with her earlier in the green room. She'd been here for a good 30, 40 minutes. How are you, Teresa?
Living the dream every day.
Excellent. Well, it's good to see you.
Great to be here.
You just walked in, so I'll let you get settled and then get ready. Go.
Fired up and ready to go.
Okay.
I'm not in great shape, but she was breathing so hard walking just from the green room, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a long walk.
I think she was
a perp walk.
Was running from Watervliet, I believe. Yeah.
From Watervliet.
Yes. Well, welcome. Good morning. You
Delighted
get settled.
To be here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Hello, everyone.
For being here. And while you get your computer up and running and we're ready to go here with topics and stuff, I just want to remind folks. So here was the deal. You know, we had this environmental event and we moved it from the Linda, because we got a little too big for our britches there, and we moved it over to Page Hall. And so Page Hall has a downstairs, and they had like 500 seats, I guess, downstairs. Well, we filled that.
Wow.
So yesterday we had to reopen the balcony. We found out that there was a balcony up there.
Uh-huh.
So if you want balcony seats, they're on the website now. Now, what's going to happen, and Alan can attest to this.
Yes.
Doesn't know what it is, but he can attest to it.
Somebody paid him off this morning.
What's in that coffee?
People get tickets, and sometimes then they forget or they don't show up, so the idea is, even if you have tickets for the balcony, that we'll probably still be able to get you in the orchestra because.
Yeah,
you know, some people won't show up.
That's right, Joe.
So this is our April 20th climate.
It's the orchestra.
Our climate event, and it is Judith Enck, Jeff Goodell, Elizabeth Colbert, and Terry Tempest Williams. Mm-hmm. Alan and I will host. It's 9 from 11 on April 20th. Tickets are available. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. And again, it'll say balcony. All the seats are free, but it'll say balcony seating. And if you want those, that's great. But just know there's probably a really good chance that we can still sit you downstairs.
And also, I have been on balcony seats, and they're actually quite lovely in Page Hall.
Yeah, they're very nice. No,
so
they're very nice.
There's no reason to worry about that or be concerned. It's a lovely place.
It is.
And you can hear very well and participate.
I actually prefer the balcony.
Oh, you do?
Well, I'm a little person, and inevitably I'm
somebody
sitting
large
six, well,
sits in
well,
front
well,
of
well,
you.
Well, there's a law that if you go to a movie,
yes,
there's a guy 6'9" who sits in front of you.
Now,
and you just want to say,
in
"Will
a
you
movie,
please cut your head off, please?"
In a movie, you can't. You can help it. In a movie, you can help it. Like, I always sit in the back row because I never want to sit
Well, you're a decent person, Joe. But if all people were like you, we'd be a lot better off in this world.
But when you buy theater tickets, you don't know who's sitting behind you. And so then you find the people behind you, and they're complaining that you're sitting in front of them. And I'll make whatever arrangements I can. But, you know, then you tick off the person behind them.
Right.
And then suddenly, you know, you're out next to the bar.
Well, Joe, but you can't go to the movies. As simple as that.
Joe, wouldn't the right thing be for when they sell you a ticket to ask you how tall you are? And then do it like they used to do at PS 75, the small guys in front, the big guys in the rear.
Well, I think it sounds a bit controlling, doesn't
they
it?
They can call up Cambridge Analytica, and they will have all your personal information. By the way, where is Page Hall for the uninitiated?
Page Hall is just two blocks from this very location. It is the downtown campus of SUNY Albany. It is on Western Avenue. It is right on the outskirts of Washington Park.
I know because I used to teach in that building.
Mm. And it's a beautiful building, so we would love to have you there. The only reason you mentioned the balcony being beautiful, and you're absolutely right. The only thing is it isn't handicap accessible.
Right.
So, but if you do need that, just let us know and we'll make arrangements for you. That's fine. Anyway, WAMC.org. Go there. You can get your tickets, and all things are good. I think we're ready to go. We're all ready. We're up and running.
Pruitt might be fired by then, so he could show up for the panel.
You know, we were thinking about that, and would that be fun?
But it is an extraordinary panel. I mean,
absolutely incredible.
This is the all-star team.
We're very excited.
Going to hear any one of those people would be worth it. But to have all four of them together and the two of you,
and we're doing it on Earth Day
weekend.
Incredible. Brilliant. Yeah.
Well, it's it'll be good. All right. So, what do we have? Oh, here's our topic. You could start with any one of these stories and have it make sense. But let us begin with this one, if we may. We'll get Alan caffeinated and then we'll be ready to go.
Decaffeinated.
Okay, sorry.
They heard you just going crazy in the front, so we got to tamp them down.
The White House is moving to calm trade fears as China retaliates. As markets seesawed and industries fretted, American officials held out the possibility that tariffs outlined this week might never go into effect. But White House officials reiterated that China must stop the quote-unquote unfair trading practices that President Trump believes have disadvantaged American companies and workers. And seesaw is certainly the case up and down yesterday, and I guess we would just call that volatility, correct?
I can't wait to hear from Vera on this because she is our expert on this stuff. But I wanted to say I was astounded, weren't you guys, when the market was down like 500 points, right? And then they send Kudlow out onto the lawn. And Kudlow says, well, we don't really mean it.
There's no trade war here, he said.
We don't really mean it. This is just a way we negotiate. And zoom, the market goes right up again. Isn't that astounding?
This was after Wilbur Ross went on TV saying, well, it's just like a shooting war. It'll eventually end in negotiations. But what he didn't say is when there's a shooting war, before there are negotiations, there are casualties. And there are casualties to this trade war or whatever it is you want to call it. The consumers in this country are going to feel it. The soybean farmers are going to feel it. And they seem to be overlooking that little picture in the attempt to fixing what they see needs fixing in the big picture.
I only have one thing to say, and you'll all yell at me. Wilbur.
So, from my perspective, I have to say I find it fascinating coming back into the country and seeing all these stories about how this trade war discussion is polarizing the country further in terms of, you know, some of the people involved in ore mining, area, steel and mining area. They're all sort of somewhat optimistic. They're feeling enthusiastic about these potential tariffs or these tariffs. Whereas now we look at farmers and certain manufacturing sectors, and the voters in those districts are deeply concerned. So I am not quite sure how to read the strategy
Whose strategy? Ours or the Chinese?
Well, the Chinese strategy I can understand, but the American strategy I'm confused by, I have to say.
Well, as we say up in my neighborhood, use Chinese. They're very smart. And what they've done, and we all know it by now, we all read the papers, they have picked the Republican districts, the red
Absolutely.
States, like soybean states. And they say, okay, Mr. President, you want us to play, you want to play rough with us? We'll play rough with you. These are the people who got you elected. Let's see what they think of this.
All right.
I don't mean to be unfairly harping on this, but is it? I think it's kind to say that it's a strategy, isn't it?
I was just going to say this presumes there is a strategy. We don't know if there's a strategy.
No, we know what the strategy. Look, if I was talking to him right now, to Trump right now, I know what he would tell me. Mm-hmm. It was straight out. He'd say, "Look, this is the way I ran my real estate business. You get in there." You make an offer, they say no good, you threaten them, you say, okay, I'm walking out of the room, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. That's the way you do it. You do a strategy, that's the way. And he would say that, and they say that, by the way. They mm-hmm. say that. That's their ultimate comeback.
Alan, is that the way, that's the way you run a real estate company, but is that the way you govern?
No. Do you really think I'm going to be stupid enough to say that, yes, you do, that's what this is all about? No, it's not, obviously. He's trying to take something from back in his past, which was effective for him, and say, mm-hmm. will it work here? I don't know. I mean, you think the Chinese now, by the way, are going to say, and they may. They may. Okay, we've been stealing your intellectual property for years, and now, because we know how strongly you feel about this, we'll give you a little something back. And he'll claim credit for it.
Absolutely, except for the Chinese also are deeply nationalistic, and the leadership has to deliver a clear victory to the Chinese population. So I don't think it's going to be quite as easy. So the Chinese don't want to look like they're... sort of intimidated by the United States or hand over anything unless they get a significant victory that they can market domestically. So I think it's going to be a little sticky.
Vera, with all sincerity and humility, I have to say I don't agree with you.
Uh-huh. Good.
The reason I don't agree on this particular point is I think the Chinese have it going really well right now. They're getting everything they want. They're basically, you know, the adult in the room. They're doing all of this. The last thing they want to do is to upset this apple cart. And I think to go back to the way it has been all along with them on the winning side, that's just fine with them.
I would disagree, because the Chinese have much to gain from shaking or tipping over the apple cart, because as much as the Trump administration is posturing with these tariffs and trying to get China to negotiate, what China has to gain is focusing the United States singularly on renegotiating with China while the Chinese are negotiating with pretty much everybody else. The Americans are withdrawing from the global market. The Chinese, among others, are filling that gap and are gaining incredible access to trading partners, which I don't think we've really realized in this country. In addition to that, the Chinese are more interested in technology, cybersecurity, high-tech industries, and so they might give a little bit on farming issues, but they're not giving in areas of semiconductors and high tech. That is where they're going, and we are missing the boat on this entire detail.
Yeah, they're locking
detail.
In rare earths.
Yep.
They're locking mm-hmm. in the minerals that they right. need for the next generation of technology mm-hmm. and such.
Well, we certainly agree on that, Vera.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying things are going swimmingly for them. They don't want a war, a trade war or anything like it. But for their own population, as you indicate, they have to stand up to the American
they
president,
do.
Who they consider to be a bully.
But they also control the levers on the North Korea situation, and they know that, and we know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, these issues are all intertwined. I mean, I think stepping back for a minute, I do agree with the Trump administration that we do have a trading problem with China. And, you know, we have a problem with IP theft. And we have a problem with
right.
with mm-hmm. trade imbalance. But the question is, how do you go about addressing that? And do you have a plan, a multidimensional mm-hmm. plan? So you've got to know that they're going to clamp down on your soybeans, right? And so soybeans are so critical to Iowa and Michigan and yeah. Virginia and all, right? They're going to clamp down on cotton mm-hmm. as they did right. South Carolina and so mm-hmm. on. So at the same time, do you have a plan then? Are you opening up new soybean markets elsewhere? I mean, has Purdue, the Secretary of Agriculture, over the last year been working to open up new markets for U.S. soybeans? So when China closes the market, we have somewhere else to go. And to Vera's point, that's exactly what the Chinese have been opening up new markets all over, including in South America. And they're basically blocking where the U.S. Yeah. would go.
Now, you know what? What you're saying, which makes so much sense to me, is that Trump's decisions are basically impetuous.
He's going quarter to quarter. Yeah. He's not looking at the long
news cycle yeah, to news right. cycle. It seems to me that what he's trying to do is drive his poll numbers up. Mm-hmm. And you saw it last night where he tweeted about, you know, I'm up to 51 now. And
In Rasmussen
yeah. poll, right?
Which is the best Republican poll.
Right, so it's crazy. Yeah. Right. But and he's where is he going today? He's going to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. You mm-hmm. know, deep into his base.
He has been. How many times has he been to West Virginia in the last
4 or 5?
Well, right. I mean, you know, he gets cheered. There's a coal mining industry.
No, I know.
Right.
It's
so going
to. They're going to at some point yeah. realize the coal industry is not coming back, and they're not.
But
going
still,
to be
how many electoral votes in West Virginia?
Exactly. No, but that's it's a critical state yeah. for how he straight. Put his electoral yep. victory together.
Right. But can I just go back on the soybean issue? I just wanted to mention, you know, it's not that the Chinese have to buy our soybeans. They can go to Brazil
Absolutely.
And replace the United States.
Exactly
now,
right.
the United States has been pressuring Brazil to cut down. You know, we've always been in sort of a trade negotiation with the Brazilians on sugar. Now, we subsidize our own sugar to hurt the Brazilians. Now, the Brazilians have been cut out from entering our market in many ways. Now, what an ideal way for the Chinese to get back at the United States. You just do a Brazilian-Chinese deal, and the U.S. soybean farmer is out.
We have to pause there. We will continue our conversation when we come back. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we will continue our conversation right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Carias-Kelly, Teresa Bourgeois, they're all here, and we welcome you as well. Panel at WAMC.org is where you can write your letters. Actually, in the last 10, 15 minutes, people took to their word processors, their devices, their phones, their computers, whatever device they have, and wrote us letters. Alan is going to give you a smattering of those right now.
Yes, that's because Sarah has picked out three of the most important.
they have been culled.
Yeah. And Toby says, Kudlow and others have made it clear that U.S. tariffs wouldn't kick in, if at all, until this summer after the comment and hearing process have taken place. What about Chinese tariffs on us? When would these take effect? Are those just threats right now, too?
Yes.
Or have they those already started? You are quite right with your last sentence, and Teresa will answer.
They have not put a time on when they're going to start.
Yeah. So in other words, they're saying, okay.
If you do that, this is how we'll retaliate.
If you throw that stone at me, I'll throw this stone at you.
So this is pre-negotiation posturing, we have.
But I thought sending Kudlow out onto that lawn yesterday
that was unbelievable, something. Right?
Yeah. But really.
But it's still moving the markets.
Yes.
And
yes,
so when the soybean futures drop the way they did yesterday, that lowers the price of soybeans. Mm-hmm. And that hurts real farmers
it
in
does.
Their real lives. When the market drops like it did on Monday, mm-hmm. you know, and it went up and down yesterday, that affects mm-hmm. people's pensions.
Without a doubt.
It makes a difference.
And economic insecurity causes people not to hire new workers.
Right.
So, I mean, this is where we're at.
And when
right?
Sarah Sanders was asked about this mm-hmm. point yesterday, mm-hmm. she said, in effect, yes, there may be some pain in the short term. Well, it's easy for her to say.
Right. But there will be, if you change...
Yeah.
If you change the economics, there will be pain, right? The question is, do you have a plan
right.
to help recover? That's what I was talking about earlier. Do you have an alternative option for soybean farmers. You tell them don't plant this year, and we're going to pay you subsidies for not planting.
And they have to make up their minds, the farmers, whether to plant or not.
And
right now, they're making that decision.
Right. I'd be interested if any listeners, are they affected? Are there apple growers around here that are affected, or, you know, other people?
Okay. That's very good. We got that from Toby, and thank you, Toby, for that. And now we're going to thank Jennifer in Chesterfield, Massachusetts. Seems Facebook is being hammered in part due to fast growth by a young company covering new territory. Would be interested to hear how other tech software companies have worked out the kinks while progressing over new ground like AOL, etc. Don't want to lose focus on the illegal use of data by companies that purchased Facebook information, and that's Jennifer in Chesterfield.
We can certainly talk about Facebook in a few minutes. It's one of our issues. I will say that I was amazed. I saw something that I haven't seen in the New York Times. I don't think I've seen it anywhere ever, which is a picture of Mark Zuckerberg in a suit.
He didn't look comfortable.
No, he did not look comfortable
at all.
Did
he have a hoodie underneath it?
No, maybe he did, yeah. But.
And Lee in Modena says, the first victims of beautiful, clean coal are those who dig it out of the earth. The second victims are everyone else.
Well, I mean, it's a difficult profession, that's for sure. Lots of accidents, security, safety, worker safety is not always guaranteed in some of those mines. I certainly agree it's a brutal way of making a living, but then it's been traditional for many small towns, and people do need to make a living. So this is...
Well, how can you not feel bad for people in West Virginia in particular who are losing their livelihood and are losing their economy and et cetera? But the fact is that coal is not coming back, what Trump calls beautiful, clean coal. I mean, it's just...
There is no such thing.
No such thing. But there are other... I mean, I'm not saying whataboutism, but there are any number of other communities in this country who have lost business is because time has passed them by.
Yes.
And then industries such as the one that I worked in for 45 years, you have to adjust. You have to get retrained. You have to go to school. But don't lay out the false hope that your business is coming back, because it's not going
to happen. Well, I wanted to say something, having been in Germany just now this past week, right? About 30% of all the energy in Germany is from alternative sources now. And you go into the smallest of... I was in some very small towns in Bavaria. Every farmer seems to have panels, you know, solar panels on the barn, on their roofs, and sell that back to the grid. There are all kinds of wind-producing, mills and structures. I mean, it is just fascinating to see how people have decided to move forward in that direction.
And likely with the encouragement of the government.
And, of course,
which
with some, support in their pocketbooks.
Yeah.
Exactly. And here we just seem to want to go backwards right now. And, I mean, Germany was very dependent on coal. And the country decided, that it was just too... dangerous to continue on this path because of all the air pollution and the asthma and the illnesses that were affiliated with coal.
Well, I was involved in Ulster County at the very early stages of programs that were designed to build solar energy. Congressman Hinchey formed a group, and a lot of money came in. And this has got to be over 10 years now. And I, if you would have told me that, on the one hand, there certainly has been progress since then, but that the progress has been as slim as it is, that would have stunned me. I mean, it just seemed like such a smart way to go on any number of levels, such a smart investment of funds to develop this industry. And it's being developed. But I don't see Trump on the rooftops where there are no solar cells at the White House, as best I know, saying this is where we ought to be going. Right. You need that leadership from government.
But and also, are you building a smart grid where you can have micro producers who sell back to the grid? You know, because you can't. The grid has to be two ways. And anyway.
And Keith says, panel, did we already lose the trade war? The Trump administration is in retreat from a war that Trump claimed was easy to win. We normally have allies that help us during real and figurative wars. I don't see any of our allies coming to our defense with this war. And that's from Keith.
Yeah, well, it's so true because, I mean, we're not, this administration does not think multidimensional. And there's no plan. There's no interconnectedness in the way this trade is connected to diplomacy, is connected to working with allies. There's just no strategy that I can figure out. How about you, Teresa?
Right. Well, when you leave the Asia, you know, the TPP, the Asia Trade Alliance, and then you buck the NAFTA Trade Alliance, and we spoke yesterday, and I'd love to hear your view on this because I know you've been down in Central America. We talked yesterday, remember, Alan, about that. How the issue of NAFTA negotiations affects the economy in places like Honduras and El Salvador and such. You know, as you're thinking about the immigration issue, are you integrating that with your strategy around NAFTA, because they are mutually, you know,
dependent,
interdependent.
Okay, and Steve says trade with China, Trump, and I want to be very careful about this word, Trump mucking around, understaffed and incompetent, can only end badly. Posturing in the media won't ease real damages.
You know, that understaffed question is very, very critical, because the president can set the tone and the direction, but then you have to have people within the government who do the details, who work out, you know, the process, what you're going to, you know, what the restrictions are and how that's all going to work. And when you've depleted your bureaucracy and you don't trust it, how do you have the information you need to make good strategic decisions?
And Charles writes, Alan, rather than a trade war to artificially make Chinese imports more expensive, why not a campaign of rhetoric and values that infuse a sense of pride and desire for American-made products over the cheap import knockoffs? Now, you know, there was a huge, several years ago, it's got to be a decade or two, that's how old I am, in which, you know, Buy America, Buy American became a big byword, and it didn't work.
Well, but the president says Buy American, but then his own companies don't Buy American, and so he needs to lead by example. Is he going to come out in the next few days and say, okay, at my all of my facilities, you know, I'm going to just buy American products or buy from our allies?
If you didn't see it, go on YouTube and find the Jimmy Kimmel bit about this, where he ordered a whole bunch of Trump branded goods, and every one of them was made in China or somewhere like that.
Yeah. And the third thing he's talking about trade, he's talking about stealing your IP, but he's also talking about, I think this is important, China investments in the U.S. And are there certain parts of our infrastructure and other things that we should retain ownership in? And, you know, what do we want to allow or not allow the Chinese to buy up? And I think that's an important conversation. But if you look at what his infrastructure plan is, it's completely counter to that, because he talks about having external investments in our infrastructure.
Right. Okay, and good morning, says Ben. Please explain this to me. Explain this to me. How is it that a U.S. president can do so many things without the approval of Congress? Are we not living in a democracy where decisions are supposed to be made in a collaborative way with the input of the people? Seems like we need to address presidential powers. And by the way, while talking about these various issues surrounding Trump, the military-industrial complex is quietly walking away with a treasure trove of our money. You know, there's a couple of things in your letter, Ben, that need some discussion. We do know that the answer is that the Republicans who control Congress right now are not in a mood to give him a hard time, even though they clearly disagree with things like this trade imbalance, which almost caused chaos in the stock markets over the last couple of days. And, that's what I got to say, Teresa.
There's a Washington Post story that came out last night, just basically analyzing what's going on and talking about how Trump's moving back to he's unfettered, moving back to his campaign style. But one of the things in there caught my eye, which is that he's saying he wants to sign more executive orders and that he's going to start this week. You know, the first one was yesterday, the executive order on the National Guard, and he's asked his people to line up. He wants, and that's basically saying, I'm a dictator. You know, I don't think that's not the right word to use, but that I'm going to do it my way. I don't want to have to work through the normal processes.
Wasn't that what he criticized about President Obama? Too many executive orders. Right. Oh, how times change.
Too much golf.
Too much golf. Yes, all these things.
No, you can get the two.
Okay. All right, here. Hi, Ira.
Hi.
Always glad to hear you. As well, of course, as the other panelists, chopped liver. Talk about opioid addiction as a national epidemic. How about our addiction to cheaper goods from China? How do you cure that addiction?
Oh, I am so glad, actually, that was mentioned, because I was thinking about that earlier, because we are so addicted as consumers in this country. We go to purchase cheap T-shirts and cheap clothing. And what about the idea of increasing domestic production, but paying for your T-shirt $30 or $40 and for your sweatshirt $80 or $100 rather than, you know, purchasing them for
But just to take
that,
the other side, I mean, if you, particularly people who cannot afford it, if you are looking at more or less the same T-shirt and one is going to cost you $10 and the other one's going to cost you $20 and the one that's $20 is made here, I'm sorry, I'd like to buy the $20, but I can't afford it.
Sure, but we also have the pattern of purchasing 6 or 7 or 8 T-shirts. How about
even
we
more
stick
expensive
with two
for those people?
But one? So, mm-hmm.
But Ira, that one inexpensive T-shirt was made with probably with slave labor, right?
I'm not
and
defending
it,
but
yeah.
But
the
question
is,
what is the American consumer, many of whom are watching penny for penny, are not thinking about it. I'm not saying that's right,
right.
And that's morally wrong and all the rest. But at the end of the day, if you can't afford to spend the extra bucks, you're not mm-hmm. going to spend it.
All
or
right.
You're going to just do without
so
it.
So can I just make one quick comment? Every semester in my classes, during when we talk about economic policy, I ask my students to check their T-shirts, sweatshirts, and shoes, watches, and where they're made. Mm-hmm. And it's increasingly obvious that barely anyone wears anything made in the United States. I mean, rarely do I have one student I can highlight and say, oh, where was your, you know, product
But if
made?
You focus on it, you can buy American.
You can.
You can buy American if you focus
if you
on it.
You can afford it.
That's
you have
right.
to spend more, right?
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss, a lot of issues. So we'll get to those right after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us, listening to the music of Sonny Rollins this morning. An amazing, amazing jazz musician and also a listener of WAMC.
He loves
right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, very cool. So we honor him this morning. Okay, so Facebook says Cambridge Analytica harvested data of up to 87 million users. Facebook on Wednesday updated their figure, saying that the data of up to 87 million users may have been improperly shared with the political consulting firm connected to President Trump during the 2016 election, a figure far higher than the estimate of 50 million that had been widely cited since the leak was reported late last month. Mark Zuckerberg, the company's chief executive, also announced that Facebook would offer all of its users the same tools and controls required under European privacy rules. The European rules, which go into effect next month, give people more control over how companies use their digital data. Facebook had not previously disclosed how many accounts had been harvested by Cambridge Analytica, the firm connected to the Trump campaign. It has also been reluctant to disclose how it was used by Russian-backed actors to influence the 2016 presidential election. Also, it was released that Mark Zuckerberg, is expected to testify on Capitol Hill next week, where he will likely face criticism over how the company collects and shares the personal data of its users. Sheryl Sandberg, Mr. Zuckerberg's top deputy, has several national television interviews scheduled for later this week.
So if you were one of the congresspersons who were asking the questions when Zuckerberg goes up there, what would be at the top of your list? To me, it would be, what did you know and when did you know it? In other words, I think that's very important because he's going to have to be facing those cameras. And I'm a big Facebook fan, but I think this is how they make their money, right? They make their money by selling this data. So,
but we don't know if that's how the data was taken by Cambridge. All of the stories said that the data was improperly obtained.
Used.
By,
yeah, right.
So, in other words, that was stolen.
But they didn't lock the door until recently.
That's correct. And that needs to be addressed going forward. But I'm not sure how much I'm willing to blame Facebook for
happened. They had an agreement with the Federal Trade Commission in 2011 that they were going to lock the door, that they were not upholding their privacy arrangements,
true.
And they were going to lock the door.
Yeah.
And they didn't put the lock on the door until this.
Then he's got a problem.
Did you have any?
No, yeah, I mean, All I can say is apparently our generation loves Facebook, but younger people don't use it. So I think that's the other problem for Facebook.
I think they saw that the parents and grandparents started getting on Facebook and they got away from it.
But, right. They found Snapchat and said, okay.
Yeah, yeah, forget it.
So but, you know, I said it before. I mean, I'm sorry to be a broken record. If you don't want something to be stolen that is personal or really private, then you should not be getting involved with the computer industry because it's out there. Somebody smart will find it.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you a question, Iris and Vera and Teresa. My question is this. When I put a picture of my grandchildren on Facebook and it gets likes and comments and stuff like that, can they extract from that picture more nefarious things like my other issue? Is there another way? Is that a way in for them, for the data miners?
I don't know that. I don't think so. I mean, I would be careful where you pose the picture in front of because your bookshelf might have Mein Kampf or something on it, and that would,
Do you mean is that a doorway, or do you mean is that something that they analyze so that they learn more about you?
No, both. So is it a doorway? Is there a possibility that it is a doorway?
It's not the doorway, but it's what they analyze.
And what they can analyze.
Okay. Yeah, for example,
Dr. Fran Berman
is
the expert on this. We got it.
But I mean, you know, basically, if you post a photograph of family members and somebody's interested in finding out who your family members are, they can go, if you allow access to your postings, somebody can go through all your postings for the past years and figure out if you ever posted somebody who's a neighbor and the neighbor posted where they live or where they go on vacation. Mm-hmm. You can put all this together.
Sure.
You know, so it's not, it depends on what you post and who you allow to enter your site.
And not to mention your, what your ads are, your buying patterns, all
well,
of that stuff.
Well, I mean, those are.
Right. What you buy, what you search, what you look at. So they can figure out if you have health issues by what you search, you know, because people tend to search health issues that their family members are concerned about.
It is important to know that, and we've said this before, we'll say it again. Facebook is not the only one doing this. Everyone's doing this.
But I think people just don't understand that they, again, will repeat it over and over. You are not the customer. You are the product. When you are on Facebook, you are the product, not the customer.
And so, go ahead. Sorry.
But, Alan, one of the things, or anybody, Ira maybe, so one of the things they announced yesterday is that Facebook is going to notify everybody, all those 87 million people whose data was stolen. So what impact will that have? Do you think people will care when they find out if they are the ones whose data was stolen?
Well, certainly some will. Some will get paranoid about the whole thing and will be concerned about it. I have too many other things to worry about, so I don't worry about it.
I just think most people...
Will you feel ignored if you weren't on the list? I was so boring. I wasn't one of the 87 million people that got asked.
I just think most people are going to shrug their shoulders unless something really sensitive and personal is released. Otherwise, I mean, I don't even know how it works. Sometimes when I'm looking in Facebook and I'm looking to find somebody who I haven't seen in 40 years, and then the name comes up and I say, I wonder if it's the same person. And sometimes when you click through, you can in fact see anybody could see their entire Facebook content. Sometimes, though, it does say blocked or is only available to friends.
Because so there you is use your privacy settings.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be a genius and you don't have to be Cambridge Analytica to see my site. If you put in my name, my site will come up.
Yeah, that's spelled F-U-S.
You know what? One of the reasons why I will never write on Facebook or one of those places, I'm heading to California for 3 weeks, is so people who do look for that sort of thing will not know that I won't be home.
It stuns me that people
And you just mentioned it on the radio.
Well, I'm not going to California for 3 weeks.
Okay.
I just got back.
No, but you should also say, which I do on the air all the time, I'm sorry, I'm late, Joe. I was getting the Rottweilers ready to be in the house while I've been away.
So the other thing about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook that came out yesterday was it tied to the John Bolton nomination, not nomination, but John Bolton appointment. And apparently that there's some ethics issues that they're holding up. You know, he's supposed to start on Monday, but may or may not because of some ethics issues. And it's tied back to Cambridge Analytica because he has the John Bolton PAC. And the John Bolton PAC is funded by the Mercers. And one of the things that he did was hire Cambridge Analytica to work on the campaigns that he helped fund. and you know, may or may not have used data improperly. So that's one of the things that they are looking into. Cool. There are a couple of stories on that last night.
But Rachel, it won't Maddow prevent his along. Appointment. He does not require congressional approval.
He doesn't require congressional approval, but can he get through the ethics review is the question. Well, because one of the things they said is that
was that ever stopping
him? Yeah,
I
was exactly.
These clowns.
He was announced before they did his background background review. Yeah. So I don't know, can he get a security clearance? I don't know he can.
I wonder how much money he'd have to spend a night to get a room in Albany if one of the Albany lobbyists helped him put up. If he gets $50 in Albany, it's got to be half that up here.
It's interesting. Congressman Faso was among those people who were in, received money from the Bolton PAC, too.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Vera Carias-Kelly, and Teresa Bourgeois join us. To join in on the discussion and to write us, all you have to do is go to panel@wamc.org. Address your letter to that. panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the issues we're discussing. We'll move on and talk about other stuff right after this short break. Good. Oh, we're having a hell of a time. Belly up to the bar, except for the one I'm Pawtucket. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome. We have
go Paw Sox. Oh,
yeah. Are they gone? Are they still there?
They may lose the
but
Sox.
But they're still there. We love Pawtucket.
There's a whole big fight about where they should build a new minor league stadium. Sox have had their farm team in Pawtucket forever, so they may lose them.
The Paw Sox. How could you not have the Paw Sox?
Have you ever been there, Teresa? Isn't it great? Have you ever been there?
No.
If they have Alan, I was going to ask Alan if you've ever been there, but I'm pretty sure
Alan
the answer
doesn't
is
even
no.
know what
Vera,
we're talking
you
about.
Know what I'm talking?
No,
so they,
no
they
idea.
Have this field, and it's so high up from the stands to the field that the thing to do for the kids, for the minor leaguers, is you put your baseball and a marker into like a sand, what do they call those? Sand bucket. And you put a string on it, and then let the thing down to go to the field, and then the baseball player will come out, sign it, put it back into the thing, and bring it back
up. It's Bull Durham.
Yeah, that's great.
We used to own a newspaper in Pawtucket many years ago when we were part of Goodson and Todman Enterprises, and it was quite a good local newspaper.
Let me just say that the reason Pawtucket came up is because David Soares mentioned Pawtucket yesterday. Some people thought in a derogatory...
One guy got really angry and said, I'm never sending you money or something like that because you mentioned
really?
Pawtucket.
And David mentioned Pawtucket.
Lovingly.
Maybe not in the... But yes, lovingly.
Endearingly.
But what we did not mention was that the reason he mentioned Pawtucket is because that's his hometown.
Right.
So people took
offense to it.
And he loves
Pawtucket.
Love
Pawtucket.
It's people. All fine. A person. That's right.
And
people.
It gives us a chance to note that today's opening day for the Red Sox.
Who?
And what place are they in?
They are a game ahead of the Yankees, who
that would be first place.
Who are hitting home runs like crazy and just have to cut down on their strikeouts.
5-1. It's going to be freezing rain and 32 degrees, but it's opening day.
All right, I'm intervening. I'm a soccer fan. I'm a European, so we'll go in there.
All right. The Yankees and Red Sox are going to be playing in London next year. Regular season.
I don't know how I feel.
Will they have
that.
Anybody coming to the game?
They believe so.
Oh, good luck.
Okay, well, it's worked for the
I'm
NFL.
Sorry.
Okay.
I got us way off track.
Donald Trump is sending National Guard troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. That'll sober you all up. The Trump administration announced Wednesday that it plans to send National Guard troops to the U.S.-Mexico border as part of a larger crackdown on illegal immigration that includes pressuring Congress to tighten the laws. But the strategy will require cooperation with border state governors who oversee their respective National Guard operations, giving them considerable power over the scope of the administration deployment plans. That means President Trump's ambition to dispatch troops to the border could be constrained by the state of California, which has repeatedly clashed with the administration over immigration and the environment. Administration officials on Wednesday disclosed few specifics about the planned deployment, such as how many troops will be sent to the border, how long they will be stationed there, and what their actual tasks will be, citing ongoing discussions with the individual states. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen said, I don't want to get ahead of the governors. This is a partnership with them. The formal announcement was made yesterday. She went on to say, we're giving them the opportunity to review our suggestions of how the National Guard can support the Border Patrol.
So here's the thing. Traditionally in this country, the National Guard is called up if there is A, an emergency, like civil disobedience or a natural disaster, or B, when they're in the last decade or so, they're rotated in and out of the Middle East. That's clearly not the case here. So you go back to the A option, which is there must be something imminent, there must be something urgent that is creating the president to send the troops to the border.
Yeah, his poll numbers are down.
The fact is there is nothing urgent.
They're coming up over the in a caravan.
Well, that's been debunked.
Now, we all know it's baloney.
Right.
And we know the numbers of immigrants crossing borders have gone consistently
right. So
down.
You have the Homeland Security Secretary yesterday making this announcement, but saying we don't know how much it's going to cost, we don't know what we're going to do, and we don't know how many people are going to send. Mm-hmm. So what's the emergency? Then you look back and say, what has Trump been doing the last few days? Well, he was in Mar-a-Lago over the weekend having dinner and playing golf with Sean Hannity. Mm-hmm. And listening to his immigration hawk, Miller. You can come to no other conclusion than that's his motivation for this, plus this caravan thing, which is another semi-right-wing, semi-hoax by the right wing. It's very sad on so many levels.
CNN. Apparently, the CNN is what sets him off every time he sees it and says, I'll have some of that.
Well, CNN is not.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You're saying Fox.
I mean Fox.
Yeah.
Of course.
But
you're
read today's New York Times story by Jeremy Peters about the caravan and how it's not what it's purported to be and how he was moving forward because of this. It gives you shudders. Each day I'm not here all that often, but each day the panel comes in and we say, boy, it can't get any more crazy or worse than this. And then every day there's something else.
For me, also, one of the big issues is, the grandiose announcements Trump makes about addressing the opium crisis. He links it directly to the border issue, which in fact is devoid of factual information because the drugs often come in through other ports of entry, not necessarily along the border, but they come in through harbors and other ports. So the sort of idea that Trump has that he needs to strengthen border control as if all problems are coming right across the U.S.-Mexican border is entirely incorrect. We know the numbers of immigrants has gone down, or what he calls illegal entries by people from Central America and Mexico has gone down. In fact, he has the right to strengthen and look at border security. It's all fine, but he's misleading the American public about what's really going on, where some of those drugs come from. Many are, in pill form. They're not even coming from Central America
or
Mexico.
Well, that's right. I mean, the opioid epidemic in Vermont or New Hampshire is not a result
not
of what's happening on the Mexican border.
So he links ideas that are not logically connected, but he weaves this story of threat. The caravan threat, the group of migrants are women and children. They're temporary workers. They often get contracts in Mexico itself. Not everybody comes across the border. The whole question of, securing the border, keeping violent criminals out. I mean, it is a narrative that's put together that actually makes no sense to anybody who pays any attention to facts or details.
There used to be a line that we used in the newsrooms around the country when you were editing a story and it looked like there'd be a hole in the story and somebody would joke, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. Well, that doesn't seem so funny anymore in light of what the campaign that Trump has made about fake news.
But it does go directly to what Vera said about anyone who follows this stuff, anybody who knows anything, that's the problem, Vera.
Yeah.
People don't know anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, our friend and colleague, Rosemary Romeo, quite some time ago, and I have to paraphrase her, but she basically said, I'm one of the elite and I'm smart and I'm tired of people telling me that I can't say that other people are stupid. Well, that's a little harsh. And as I say, I paraphrased her. But the fact is, there are a lot of people in this country who are just not that intelligent or not that incisive. And they're putting their money behind somebody who is appealing to them emotionally. And it's creating a sad situation in this country.
Joe, I want to
just think they're not intelligent or incisive. I think they're, you know, they're people who are focused on other things. You know,
But don't blame those of us who do pay attention or who do have a better grasp on the issues for being quote unquote the elites and then using that as a dirty word.
But there are people who do pay attention who think differently than we think about this.
Without a doubt.
And that's the beauty of America.
Without a doubt. I wish I could be sure that that was a large number of people.
But we should have some common set of facts, and one would hope that the President of the United States would, you know, use a common set of facts. I mean, he tweeted out about 3 hours ago, you know, the caravan is largely broken up thanks to the strong immigration laws of Mexico and their willingness to use them so as not to cause a giant scene at our border. Well, most of that sentence is not true if you really understand what this caravan is and who these people are and what they do every year. And they go into, you know, they were not coming to our border for the most part.
Most of them wanted to stay in Mexico.
They come into Mexico. They get short-term work visas. They work there. Some stay there. They are economic refugees or migrants. And to use them to tell a lie about them for the purposes of raising his poll numbers is just...
And most of those that do intend to come into this country were going to come in legally.
Alan.
Okay, first thing I want to do is report on something we were talking about before. Rasmussen, I want to give the two polls that are most contemporary. Thursday, April 5th poll, President Trump job approval, according to Rasmussen, which is I have kidding around, as they say, but not so kidding around, said it's the best Republican poll there is. They always show the Republicans doing better. The approval rate for the president is 47%, and the disapproval rate is 51%. Now, on Wednesday, April 4th, the Reuters poll showed the approval rate to be 41%. That's a day earlier. And the disapproval rate, 55%. So he's not doing too hot there with an approval rate of 41. Okay, over to the letters.
But he's not in the 30s anymore.
Yeah, I was just going to say his numbers have improved. We can argue as to which is the best poll, but the numbers have improved.
You know what else is interesting is where's Mike Pence? I mean, you haven't seen the vice president through any of this. He's laying low.
He's having dinner with his wife.
I saw that he's interestingly enough, he's going to Nevada to raise money for Senator Heller, who is one of the people who's, you know, been in a tiff with Donald Trump.
Okay, so let's say Facebook says a bill in New Salem. I think Alan is right. Good way to start. I would ask Zuckerberg how much money they made from this supposed breach. All right. Good morning, panel, says Andrew. I'm wondering why if the Facebook data was improperly or illegally taken by Cambridge Analytica, then why is it Facebook making a public statement about suing them for damages? Until that happens, I am not sold that the data was really taken against the rules. And that's from Andrew in Pittsfield. And Kiva says, the difference between old-fashioned political targeting and targeting in the Facebook age is the depth of information they can cull beyond demographics like age and gender. Like the Cambridge Analytica whistleblower pointed out, this was a psychological operation that preyed on people's emotions and fears and targeted them personally. This is an experiment in social engineering that uses emotions and not facts in order to obtain power. Remember how terrible the election in 2016 felt to people on all sides? That was the design. Do we want our civilization to be run this way? Delete Facebook. Thanks, and that's
well. There's something interesting that Kiva says about, you know, Facebook is in essence an echo chamber for many people who just get the same ideas and positions repeated on a daily basis. That's why if you don't delete Facebook, it might be good to have some diverse opinions represented there, so you don't get targeted and get more of the same.
But that's no different than in the 50s and in the 40s, where a bunch of the friends would gather on the corner waiting for the morning papers to show up.
Yeah,
and they were all
insist that it's factual. It's a shooting the breeze.
All of the discussion was a little different, nuanced, yeah. But typically your friends were all people who believed the same thing that you did.
Sure.
Okay, so Eden says, yes, Facebook can determine a lot from what you post and like. I have never filled out my profile, me neither, by the way, out of lethargy. But they have figured out to the point where they filled in 70% of my details, like hometown, high school, grad date, college, etc., by themselves. And by the way, they get that wrong every once in a while. They do.
Just delete it.
What'd you say?
Delete it.
No, I never share anything on Facebook, and that's from Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael says, thanks for sticking up for those of us that don't have the discretionary cash to afford to buy USA goods. The rest of the panel would let us eat cake, and that's from Michael.
You missed the first three words of that email.
Thanks to all. I'm so sorry, Ira. Your eyes are very, very good. The first three words are, thanks to Ira. I don't know why.
I don't hear that too often in personal life or in professional life. So
right,
I don't want to lose it when
you're
it comes
quite
up.
Right, Ira, and we are deficient in not saying it enough. And Donald says, executive order. What?
Thank you, Ira.
Yeah. Donald says, executive order. With the existence of an inept legislative branch by creating chaos in every corner of government, Trump sets himself up to be a hero who, by executive order, is the only one who can get anything done. A read of Timothy Snyder's book, The Road to Unfreedom, explains the strategy excellently executed by Putin, learned by Paul Manafort, and practiced by Trump. And that's Donald from Saratoga Springs.
And that is a brilliant book recommendation.
I have it, and I'm reading it now. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be a good idea to get him on the air for now.
Mm-hmm. What is it called again?
What's the book?
The book is Timothy Snyder's book, The Road to Unfreedom. Yes, he's a brilliant guy.
Mm-hmm.
Rob says, I don't know where your panelist gets her information, but people 18 to 34 still represent by far the largest group of Facebook users.
Well, I would actually doubt that because I don't think I have very many students anymore in the 18 to 21 range that are even remotely considering Facebook. They're going for Instagram and
Snapchat
and other sources. So maybe
of course,
that's
Instagram
just my
is owned by Facebook, right?
Right.
Yeah. Oh well, maybe if you think of it that way, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. My kids basically put the grandchildren both on both Instagram and on Facebook.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lillian says, good morning. Yes, buy American. Nice idea. But is it feasible? Teresa says it's doable, but not with a teacher's salary. Two children, stay-at-home wife, mortgage, car payment, insurance, medical and food prices going up and all the rest. And that's from Jane.
Well, part of that problem, of course, I mean, I agree. It's not sustainable in the sense, but nor is buying cheap goods from other countries where people make things with under slave labor conditions. That's also not sustainable for them, and it will not be maintained over long periods of time. What the problems are that we have are, for example, in this country, thinking about addressing student tuition challenges and student loan problems. We have domestic problems that we need to address, so we don't have to struggle with the teacher salary. And teachers, obviously, are protesting all over this country about unfair pay, the horrific conditions they encounter in some of the classrooms. I mean, it is shocking to see how little emphasis there is in the United States when it comes to primary, basic, and high school education.
And the other thing you can do is buy clothes at resale places like Salvation Army or Goodwill. They have some very nice stuff, or garage sales and such. They're ways to, I mean, you're still buying Chinese stuff, but it's an environmental opportunity
right.
also.
Well, Sherry, following up on the same theme, says, Clueless white elitists, that's us. You have all obviously no idea what it's like to be one of the working poor. Many of us provide essential service because we feel it's the right thing to do, yet we don't make a living wage. I care for developmentally disabled people. I work for paycheck to paycheck, and mostly what I do is pay my bills and keep us fed and clothed. $80 T-shirts? Question mark. Get real. Have you all forgotten it's a global economy, in capital letters, global economy? Have a nice day, and that's from Sherry.
Yeah, I would never pay $80 for a T-shirt.
No,
ever.
Who would? I think the $80
well,
for the sweatshirt
check it out.
Example.
I don't know who would pay $80. Well, I'm sure there are people who pay $80 for a T-shirt. It would not be me.
No. Yeah. Well, Lynn says solar panels on the White House. President Carter installed solar panels on the White House in 79. Reagan took them down. Obama had some reinstalled 2013. Mm-hmm. Don't tell Trump.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Margaret says Chinese. You mentioned that the Chinese are the adult in the room with their experience of 5,000 years of government. We are toddlers by comparison and have had the intent to reach political adulthood, but Trump is making toys out of our instruments of governance. There are many of us who realize the real danger to real people in real time. Thank you for having the discussion, and that's from Margaret. And Chris says, trade war? Will tariffs put Walmart out of business?
Well, I mean, you know, it's really interesting to think about Walmart not having any Chinese-made products. I think you would find very empty stores. So, yes, Walmart would really struggle.
Remember, that used to be their, when they started, that was their thing. It was all American. We're out of time. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Alan and Ira and Vera and Teresa. We will be back right after this short break.